Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Laser Graves. I'm your co-host, E.K. Wimmer.
Hi, E.K. Wimmer. It's so good to be here. I'm your co-host, Mariah Rose Wimmer, also known largely by you and our listeners as the Lord of the Dogs.
I would say largely known by you as the Lord of the Dogs.
I'm signing my checks and they're cashing them.
This is episode 39, and I will say, I'd have to go back and look. When was our Monster Dog episode? Probably like 6 or 7 or somewhere around there.
72, 54,
That's how 22. Many episodes you've been trying to convince people to call you Lord of the Dogs.
Was that the first time I did that?
Yeah, well, because it was Alice Cooper. Remember the Lord of the Dogs?
Well, it's weird that I'm doing that.
Yeah, I know. I think that every episode.
Okay.
But hey, it's cool.
Here we are.
We last episode for She, man, that was a fun one.
Yes.
For She, we had talked about, instead of celebrating our 40th, celebrating our 39th.
Oh.
And so this week we have something extra special.
We're kind of
going backwards in time to the beginnings of Laser Graves when we first started. For our early, early listeners, or anybody who's visited our early episodes, we were not originally just movies. We were events and books and music and everything from the 80s. And then we kind of singled out movies because that's what we really had a knack for. But
mostly just because that's what we had time for.
Yeah. And we, though, have been kind of longing to do kind of an event and book for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I got a little nostalgic for some of our older episodes, and I pitched this idea, and you really liked it, and I thought this would be fun to do for our 39th episode
39.
As a celebration.
Feeling fine.
So, okay, this week.
What? What are we doing?
I'm very excited.
I'm so underprepared.
That's an understatement.
Oh.
We are doing an episode on the history of Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Oh, snap.
Which started late 70s, but really their heyday was the 80s into 90s. And we have kind of a fun episode planned where we'll do the history, but then we also chose a book. And
we chose our own adventure.
That's right.
Guys.
You have two books in front of you. Which one will you choose? And then we're going to talk about what our experience was reading them. So that's what we're doing this week. Very excited. But before we get into it, we should knock out some of our little segments that we do.
Thrift Store Finds.
Thrift Store Finds.
With three Z's.
Okay, you went first last time. I'll go first this time.
Okay.
So this time, I have a good one. Mm-hmm. Reoccurring theme of my thrift store finds is that one thrift store that I have that I'm friendly with the owner, and he'll let me sometimes go through the boxes of VHS in the back that they haven't put out because he doesn't care. And so I haven't gone to him in about a month and a half because nothing was happening and I was kind of over it. So I swung in this week. And he said, oh, hey, yeah, you're that guy.
You're the creeper.
Yeah, totally. And he also said, did my helper up there, did she grab a box for you earlier this week? And I said, no. And then he gave me this kind of side glance and said, oh, well, looks like she gave a box to somebody else. You got a little competition, buddy.
Oh.
And I thought, I don't have competition.
I'm the king of VHS.
Trust me, we're not looking for the same things. But
I don't
he
know.
Went back, found a couple boxes, which made me very happy, pulled them out, and I started looking through them. And in it, I found a couple things, but two really, really good ones. So my thrift store finds of the week are, first, the media copy of Hell Night, an 80s film that I've definitely been wanting to cover. It's got Linda Blair in it. It's kind of like this fraternity-turned-witchcraft thing. Classic, classic 80s.
I know I've seen it. I just don't remember it.
Yeah, I've had a copy for a long time, but it was a later copy. So this is the original media copy. So very excited about that. And then as I was digging through more, it didn't have the cover, but you'll understand why I still took it, because I recognized the font and the color right away. I have a grail list of tapes I want, and I've knocked off a couple. Eraserhead, Night of the Creeps, I've gotten a few. But this one is one that I didn't even write on there because it seemed so absurd to even consider getting it. It was, and we know this movie as a couple very well because we watched it, Frankenhooker.
Yes.
And I found a loose tape of Frankenhooker. Did not have the cover, which sucks because the cover was an interactive cover that has a button that you press and it says, want a date?
And oh, so, I remember that.
It doesn't have the cover. Doesn't matter. I would take that tape in a second because the tape alone is worth more than most of the tapes I have. So I grabbed a cover, or I grabbed the tape, and then I printed out a cover on the internet until I can find a replacement, which will never happen. But hell's a good finds because Hell Knight, original media copy, and a loose copy of Frankenhooker, both of which we will cover on this podcast. I'm very excited. Extremely excited.
I suspect you'll find a Frankenhooker case.
I think so. I was talking to, like, I'm really connected with the VHS collecting community, and one guy was saying, like, oh, you need to go on the Facebook groups, because they always have that stuff, and I'm not on Facebook, and I said, well, that's not going to work.
I feel like Facebook's dying anyway.
Yeah.
I think you were just, like, such a hipster that you got off Facebook before everybody else, and the rest of us who are still on there for their grandmas, like, I'm sincerely on there for my grandmothers.
I burned that shit down. It was like a blaze of glory. I was like, I am off this. I have no interest in this, and I will never look back. And I have enjoyed...
It's been good for you.
...every moment. And that was years and years ago. So, not missing that. Yep. Anyway, that's my thrift store finds. They're really good ones this week. And we will cover, guaranteed, we will cover both of those as future episodes. Maybe we'll do one of them next week.
Maybe. Who knows?
For 40th, which will be not a celebration episode. No. Because that's 39.
Yep.
Okay, your turn.
Oh, my turn.
Thrift store find.
So, I've got something of a thrift store find backlog, which is rare for me.
Oh, yeah, you're in like a golden era of thrift store finds.
Yeah, it's been, you know how you, it's like a famine and feast scenario. I was in a long famine period. Now, feast.
Okay.
I have a glut of thrift store finds.
Okay, I'm gonna do
a twofer today.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Because I purchased them at the same time. So I was at Savers and I was walking around, nothing, and I just kind of went and peeked in their specialty cases where they just overprice things that come in.
Oh yeah, like the other day they had an Atari, what was it? Like an Atari 800 or something. I was so excited because I've never seen one before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to buy it for that price. But anyway.
Yeah, so it was the overpriced cabinet. But I saw something, a cuff bracelet. And I was like, And so I just went closer and closer because I'm a sucker for them. I think it's like Erica Badu. I'm like, yeah, I got to have all of the cuffs on my arms.
Oh, does she wear cuffs on her arms?
Yeah. But...
So does Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between.
Okay. Like you're channeling Conan, but you're as cool as Erica Badu.
I'm neither. But I saw the cuff. It called to me. It whispered, Mariah, come look at me in this cabinet. So I did. I walked over, and you know what was on it?
What?
The periodic table of the elements.
Oh, that would have been... awesome in science class.
I was so jazzed. I know, because I took tests on it, and I could have been like, oh, yes, my wrist tells me this.
This is my jewelry.
So I was like, gotta have it. No price is too high. Thankfully, it was only $3.99, so solid. And I called the guy back, and I saw something. It was in a plastic bag on a hook on the back, and I saw it, and I said, what's that flesh-colored thing? And the guy, who was like a super hipster, he went, what? It's a salt and pepper shaker.
I know what you're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've talked about this for pretty much every episode that we were going to post images of what we find. And I don't think we've ever done it.
Okay.
We're lazy as hell.
We gotta backtrack some.
Absolutely has to be posted. Okay, go ahead. I know what you're about to say.
So it was in a like plastic bag, and all I could see was flesh color, and I knew it was like ceramic. He brought it over, and it was a nude woman like laying on her back with her legs crossed. Her breasts are exposed, but they're also removable. One is salt and one is pepper.
Yeah. It's like she's in that position of, you know, this reminds me of when I was a child growing up, my dad refused to sit on the couch. He always laid on the floor in front of the TV, and he would put his arms behind his head to lift it slightly, mm-hmm. and he would always cross his leg, but lay on the ground looking up.
So if he had salt and pepper shaker,
salt and pepper breasts. Yeah, this would be my father.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking.
This was an amazing find. What do you think is the era? Is it like a 60s?
I don't know. There's actually no marking on it. So yeah. I couldn't identify it. It's like a thing. If you look up salt and pepper shaker boobs, there's a lot. I saw some pretty mediocre ones. I feel confident that I have superior salt and pepper shaker boobs. So,
You have? Okay.
I possess them.
Okay, that wasn't awkward.
It is not. Why did you make it that way? What's wrong with you?
Because I can isolate a quote that you just said, which was, I have superior salt and pepper shaker boobs.
No, I see no problems here.
Okay. So that was good finds because I know what else you found. I thought you were going to talk about the others.
I'm holding back.
You are definitely in a golden era of thrift store finds.
I know. And this is on the hot tails of the super large black velvet painting.
Which is now hung.
Which I hung. You were like, it doesn't fit in our bathroom. And the queen of the world here just... easily hung it and it fits in our bathroom, and now we have like 42 inches of black velvet space left. We are so close to covering our whole bathroom.
Yep. All right. Well, that's the thrift store finds of the week. So the other segment that we toyed with last week,
we had an overwhelming response.
I can't even explain how many people contacted us. Here's the interesting thing about my fun fact for the week is I used to run a blog that interviewed celebrities. Mm-hmm. there's an interesting fact, and not like minor celebrities, like
major
celebrities,
major mid-level celebrities.
I don't know
what accents are we doing here.
Some of them have achieved A-class status now, but when I got in there, when I swooped in, they were tickling the rim of the A.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's your interesting fact?
My fun fact is that I met you because I got in trouble.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I thought I'd go big here. Just now I decided this. I got in trouble. We will skip the reason that I got in trouble, but my parents were supes mad at me. And my,
probably for saying the word soups.
I know. I'm mad at myself. Grounded.
Okay.
To be grounded now. Anyway, it was upsetting. I was grounded for over a month in high school, and I was forced to take art lessons. Those art lessons led to a painting, which I brought with me to a class on public speaking. And in this public speaking class, we were supposed to talk about something we knew how to do and bring an example. So I brought my painting to my public speaking class, and our art teacher, he wasn't my art teacher at the time. He spotted me in the hall carrying this painting that I had made because I got in trouble. And he walked with me to my public speaking class, sat in on my little speech, and told the class that I would no longer be in public speaking, that I would now be in AP art. And there weren't any seats for me, so I sat between my friend Jesse and you. And the rest is history.
That's true. You came in
57 years later.
You came in with some heat under your arms with those paintings. I was like, wait, what? Get out of here. Okay, well, there you go. Okay, that was fun. But it's time to dive into what we're all here. Everybody who's crowded into the VHS vault. All these people in here. It's alive.
Are you calling this space the VHS vault?
Look behind you. That's what I thought.
Ugh.
This week, we're talking about Choose Your Own Adventure. This is something near and dear to my heart because I am a diehard fan of Choose Your Own Adventure books. I was a big reader of them in elementary school, and I don't know your background. Were you?
I read some. I had mixed feelings because I basically figured out the formula right away and also discovered flaws in the writing. And so I felt a little bit superior.
Oh, of course you did. You're one of those people that were like, oh, I could do this better.
And I could.
But you never did. You're the equivalent of the grandma who looks at a Jackson Pollock and is like, my child could paint that. Mm-hmm. And then the answer is, but your child didn't.
Except for it's not a Jackson Pollock, but whatever.
Sure, it's pretty damn close. Especially with the value
and 98%.
Cultural input.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into it. I don't know... I don't know the demographic of our listeners, so I'm going to assume some people know what this is, some people don't.
If you don't, you should. Here we go.
Okay, here's the plan, and I'm basically looking at you as I'm saying this, because, just so everybody's aware, you have half a page of notes for this whole entire episode?
Oh, it's three quarters.
Okay, well, so the plan is, I researched to give you the history of choose your own adventure novels.
You're going to give me the history?
Personal.
What?
It's catered to you.
So romantic.
I know. Still have it. And what I'm going to do is give you the history, and then we have both chosen a choose your own adventure book, and we're going to walk through what that experience was like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited.
Let's do this.
Okay. Choose your own adventure. It goes back. It's got kind of an interesting history, but it dates back to the 60s, where there's a guy named Edward Packard, who is the creator of Choose Your Own Adventure.
From Twin Peaks, Josie's husband?
I was thinking that, but is it Edward?
I don't know.
I feel like it was a different name.
Gordon.
It was not Gordon.
Florgenspark.
It's definitely the Packard Mill.
Okay.
And for some reason, I'm totally spacing.
Don't worry about
what the name was. Okay. So Edward Packard, after he burned down his mill, he had some money. And one night, I love the creation story of Choose Your Own Adventures. This could not be any better. He had this character that he had created, and he would tell bedtime stories to his two daughters every night with this character. And they would go on adventures of like island hopping and pirates and all these travels. And one night, as the story goes, he was telling a bedtime story to his two daughters, and he kind of froze up with ideas, as I can definitely relate to when our daughters are like, tell us more stories and when we're on a road trip. So he's sitting there. He doesn't have a clue where the story's going. Mm-hmm. And instead, he turns to his daughters and he said, what do you think should happen? And what happened, very interestingly, was they both came up with completely different endings to the story. So he then told the story from both perspectives for each daughter. And then afterwards, it kind of stuck with him. And he had this idea of like how crazy that they created the story. They were involved. They chose their own story and adventure. So then he thought about how he could market this. And that's really the kind of genesis of Choose Your Own Adventure. So then he went out to write a book. He was a lawyer originally. I'm trying to remember. He graduated from... what was his... I wrote it down. Oh, he was a lawyer with degrees from Princeton and Columbia. So he was like a smart dude. And he had this idea to like give it up to write a children's book with this branched narrative where you could choose different endings and different paths. So he worked really hard. He came up with this idea. And then in 1969, he finished his book. So it was just a few years later and was rejected by every single publisher that he sent to. They were like, this makes zero sense. And he kind of shelved it, gave up a little bit, but kept thinking about it. And then flash forward a few years later, by 1976... somehow, I don't remember the details and doesn't really matter for this episode, but it got into the hands of a guy named R.A. Montgomery, who was the publisher of a small publishing company named the Vermont Crossroads Press. And this guy was like, I think you have something. So he agreed to publish the very first Choose Your Own Adventure book, but it wasn't called that then. It was just this book. It was actually called Sugarcane Island, is what it was. And
oh,
so,
I like that.
Yeah, so he put it out. Well, the full title was The Adventures of You on Sugarcane Island.
Oh, yeah. Darling.
And so this was the first book that was put out, and it actually, for a really small press, sold 8,000 copies.
Solid.
And they realized, like, they could not keep up with this if they wanted to really flood the market with this kind of idea. So they decided to try and shop it around some more, and it took a little bit of work because it was so weird. But by 1979, somebody had pitched it onto a higher up, and they got their big break. Yeah.
I think if this is one of those kind of things where if you hear what it is, it sounds like an actual nightmare.
Yeah.
But if you see it, like see an example, you go, oh, okay, I get how it works.
Yeah. And so the person who took it, she was like, I don't remember her name, but she was like a senior.
Oh, Lucille Florbenschnorb.
Yep, that's it. Got it. And actually, you could choose your own name for this story.
Oh.
So it's either Lucille or it's Betty Flockenstock.
Oh.
Who?
I was going to say Gilbert Gottfried.
So what happened is, this lady got a hold of it and took a risk and said, I think this is something and it could be something, and got some heat for it. But it went to a major, major publishing house, Bantam Press, which was putting out all this stuff. They picked it up.
We're kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And what they did was they signed a contract with both R.A. Montgomery and Edward Packard and said, we're signing you into a 6-book deal and let's just see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a smart thing to do because it took off. So, before we dive into the first book, for anybody who may not be aware of what Choose Your Own Adventure is, like the structure, I thought it would be wise to give a little bit of a background on how mm-hmm. a Choose Your Own Adventure book works, like
yeah.
the narrative.
Yeah.
Do you want to share that? Because that's something that you could definitely talk about.
Can I use a specific example from our life?
Sure. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Okay. So when we were in college, I, being the cool wife that I am, created a choose your own adventure vacation. So instead of doing a book, I did envelopes, but you'll get the gist. So Eric and I were in school and we were in college and we got out of school. We knew we were going to take a trip because we had somewhere to be on. Was like Saturday night or Sunday night.
We had a concert to go to.
Yeah, we were going to go see Susie and the Banshees in Seattle. But Eric didn't know how we were going to get there. What I did is I handed him an envelope and it said, you just got out of class. You're going to get in the car and you're going to drive to the interstate. Do you drive east or west on the interstate? And you chose a direction. And then I had prepared envelopes for every possible answer you could give. So basically, I threw away an entire trip after that.
Right.
And so you chose one direction and you opened another envelope. And in that envelope, it said, okay, you chose west. Now you drive to this next town and you get a hotel room or you continue on for another however many miles, you know, whatever. And so we did this off like for 3 days. I think we left on Friday and we chose our trip that way. And we ended up driving along the Oregon coast. But what I had done is I had planned vacations that all ended at this concert on Sunday night. So we could have driven so many different directions and we would have, every single one would have landed us in Seattle on Sunday night.
One of the choices we made ended with, had us finding ourselves on a beach on the Oregon coast during an international
sandcastle
competition.
Yeah.
This was awesome. So yes, it was really fun. And that's the basic premise. The one thing I will add to this though, the difference between your trip and these books are, they don't all converge into one ending.
Not one conclusion, yes.
The first book alone had 44 different endings that you could conceivably
have.
That's
too many.
Right. Which is interesting because by the end of the heyday of these books, they were down to about 8 endings. They had gotten so lazy.
How funny would it have been if I gave you these options, and I was like, bummer, you're headed back home.
We'll have to sell our tickets. Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
So, that's the premise of a choose-your-own-adventure novel, though, is that you give a page or two of content, and then at the end of the page it says, if you want to do this, turn to this page. If you want to do this, turn to this page.
Yeah.
It could end in either ending the story, or it could progress the story, and it can go in wild directions.
Yes.
It's really clever. It's really fun. You can reread the same exact book and have a different adventure multiple times, which is pretty genius. These took off instantly.
Sure. It's a fast read, too.
Yeah. And what's cool is that the term choose your own adventure was not applied yet. That actually came from like a marketing specialist that needed to come up with a way, because they realized they had a unique type of novel that had never been out there. So they needed a term. And somebody started calling the first couple books like Choose Your Adventure in the West, or Choose Your Adventure in Space, or whatever like that. And then somebody was like, oh, we should call it Choose Your Own Adventure. Mm-hmm. And that's how it came to be. The very first book, book number one, was called The Cave of Time.
Ooh.
And it was by Edward Packer, the creator of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out in 1979. That was the very first book. So although we're an 80s podcast, the bulk of this is 80s. So that's why I feel comfortable doing it.
I think so.
For my book that I want to discuss, that we're going to get into it.
Okay.
So everybody has a good background, right? Uh-huh. I, for the record, collect Choose Your Own Adventure books, so I have a lot.
Yeah, you do.
So we both went through the library and said, this is the one I want to do. The one I chose, The Cave of Time, number one.
Oh!
I wanted to see how it started.
How is it? Tell me.
It's interesting.
This is the one
that has like 44...
Oh, it's too much.
It's a little scattershot.
Okay.
But I've got an addition to this story after I'm done.
Okay.
But let me take you through what happened, because this is what was making me excited about this episode, is I wanted to kind of walk you through the premise.
Okay.
So in this one, The Cave of Time, it opens up with a hike. And so, you know, you're first person. It's like, you are the character.
Because you make the choices.
Right. So it opens up with a hike, and I'm hiking up this mountain, and I spot a cave that I had never seen before. And I go into it, and I'm wandering around, but I realize it's getting dark. And so the very first kind of choice I have to make is, it's getting dark, do I want to stay in the cave overnight, or do I want to try and walk by moonlight and find my way back down to the cabin that I was staying at?
Walk by moonlight. What did you choose?
I waited.
Ugh.
I wanted to stay in the cave, because I was hoping something would happen. So anyway, I sleep. It's the next morning. I then leave the cave. But as I'm leaving, I fall off like a cliff and end up back in the cave. And apparently, it's the Cave of Time. And there are two paths in front of me now as I like come to my senses.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder to myself, is one a path that leads to the future? Or is one a path that leads to the past?
Oh!
And I have to choose.
Oh, that's okay. So good!
It is so good, but here's my first criticism.
Oh.
Is I love the premise, but who in their right mind would walk into a cave and think it's a time-traveling cave?
But like, wouldn't that be a delight to discover?
No indication that it's a time-traveling cave.
Oh, but maybe
it's literally just two paths.
But you have your experience, either a moonlight walk or a daytime fall. And that's how you discover.
Okay, so I go in, and first off, how do I also know this is called the Cave of Time? Whatever. So I go right. That's the way I'm going to go, not left.
So you don't know if you're going future or past, you choose right or left.
Well, would you like to know where my path led
me? Yeah.
It led me to a tunnel that then opened up to an old man with a beard, like some kind of like wizard. And he asked, what am I doing here? And I said, I want to go back to my own time. And I also don't remember time traveling, so whatever. And then I ask who he is, because that's one of the ideas. And you can either ask who he is, or you can like go a different route. And I choose to go the route of asking who he is, which is turn to page 45.
Okay.
I turn, and he tells me this huge pile of nonsense I'm going to read the whole passage because my decision was to ask him who he was. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened. "I'm a philosopher," the old man says, "who, when asked to choose a time, instead chose timelessness, so that although nothing would ever happen in my life, I would have all the time in the world to think about it." "Are you happy with your decision?" I asked. "No, because philosophy is nothing outside of time. Take the tunnel to your right, return to your own time, and let your life be your philosophy." The end.
That's some Princeton garbage.
That is total nonsense. And I was so pissed because I was like, that's it. That was the end of the cave of time. Is I literally fell down, walked down one tunnel, and had a wizard tell me some nonsense.
But that's kind of great.
Okay. So that's what happened. I went back and chose a different step and instead chose to try a different time. And so I went to page 44 and that put me in the middle of a war zone instead. And then I ended up dying in a war zone or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So my thoughts on this is it was fun, but it assumes a lot from the reader because it's like, it's the past and present, but I'm like, nothing ever gave any indication that there's time travel.
I don't think you need that.
You're saying that because you know how they work later on, but if this was a first-time read, I would be pretty confused.
I feel like most people get it straight out.
Although, I enjoyed it, and so it was a lot of fun. I later read that this same book, you can go like meet dinosaurs, there's all kinds of stuff. Oh. You can go in all different roads. But mine ended up with a really hoity-toity wizard giving me some knowledge that I didn't ask for.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Before I do mine. Do you know how R.A. Montgomery began writing these, him or herself?
The publisher?
Yeah, because R.A. Montgomery also writes these.
Yeah, I think he was also kind of a writer as well. His background was he graduated from Yale, and he wrote around 50 books for this series, too. So
I guess I wonder if there's, like, bad blood, or if they're like, okay, cool, we're in this together.
I've heard that we'll get into... Actually, let's save that until we wrap up at the end on, like, what happened.
Cool.
But they definitely... it was an interesting partnership, we'll say that.
Yeah, I actually wondered about that as I was reading mine. Do you want me to go into mine?
Yeah, I definitely want to hear yours. So, I don't know which one you chose.
Well, let me lead you on my journey.
Okay.
Okay, so I read House of Danger. You gave me a whole selection, and I chose House of Danger. This was written by R.A. Montgomery.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome.
Perfect.
That's so cool. I was wondering what his were like because I've never really thought about... When you do a podcast, you think about things in much more detail. Mm-hmm. I've read all these books and I never thought about the author. I just kind of accepted them because they outsourced to so many authors.
Yeah.
But I love that you just, of all of them, happened to choose the other creator.
That's so pretty cool.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Wait. Before you get started, what year did this one come out?
So this came out in 1982. I know this. We did not pause to look it up.
Okay.
I have it memorized.
You had three, like one page of notes, and within that you didn't even write when the one book you read came out.
It occurred to me to do that. And
the
I was
laziest
like,
episode you have ever done.
No, definitely not. But I was like... should I write down the year? And I debated this in my mind and I thought, what kind of weirdo is going to ask about the year? Obviously the 80s.
Okay.
So anyway, this one, the problem I had with this is that it assumes you're a boy. So it's illustrated and it has you, but it has illustrations of a boy, of a white boy.
I thought about that a lot, actually. That was one of my biggest arguments with this whole franchise, is that it puts you in first person, but it specifically makes you a type of person. And it's usually like a white child.
A white
It's like well-to-do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's annoying because I thought about any kind of any minority of any kind reading these and being instantly disconnected, that that's if I was to go back and do this, I don't think I would ever make that distinction. I think I would make it very broad and open.
No race or gender, because even just choosing a gender, you automatically take 50% of your audience out of first person.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Okay, anyway.
So apparently I was a white, red-haired, freckle-faced boy.
Oh, cute. Mm-hmm.
So what I did here was...
your name was Carrot Top.
No. So I had our children go through this with me, and I had them navigate the answers, because I kind of wanted like an experience from a children's point of view as opposed to my cool adult point of view.
Okay.
So I am an aspiring detective and also a psychic investigator.
Yeah, you are.
I get a phone call to my parents' basement where
you're a little redheaded kid?
Little redheaded boy. That's basically my brother.
Is your name Tobias?
No. Okay. I don't have a name because it's just you.
Okay.
So I am in my very private basement office space as a child that I have in my parents' basement.
Sure.
I get a phone call and somebody's like, help me, help. And then they hang up. And I'm like, oh no, I wasn't prepared. So I set up my phone tracer so that the next time a call comes in, I can trace and
get
a name and address. And sure thing, they call back. And the person's like, help me. And I get a name and an which is Henry Marsden, and I get an address as well. So I get the name Henry Marsden, and then it's at this point that I can choose to call my friends, Ricardo and Lisa, because I know I should not proceed in an investigation without some backup, because I've learned this previously. And this is where a really bizarre backstory is inserted.
Ricardo and Lisa?
Yep. But this is also...
I'm gonna keep my comments to myself.
You should. But okay. So at this point, there's like a really long backstory, long for Choose Your Own Adventure anyway, where it explains why this child has all of this technology. And apparently he has solved some case, and the FBI gave him reward money that he used to, like, create an office space in his parents' basement.
Oh, that's very generous of them.
So, also in this previous experience, I have learned that I do not need to do solo work. So I can either choose to call Ricardo and Lisa or just go over to the address and investigate solo. And so I asked our daughters, what do I do? Do we go solo or do we call Ricardo and Lisa? And our children chose to call Ricardo and Lisa. So I call them. They don't answer. I leave messages. And I fiddle around, and I'm like, that name Henry Marsden is so familiar. Where do I know it from? And then I remember that I bought a book for 25 cents last week. And in it is, I discover the name Henry Marsden. And Henry Marsden was a warden at the prison.
Okay.
Yes, and it is believed that Henry Marsden was killed in a prison riot in 1887, and it is believed that he is a ghost who haunts the prison.
Oh, okay, I like this.
Yes.
Also, I'd like to take a moment to mention, it's interesting, I wonder if there was a conscious effort of this, is that a lot of the decisions cater to different personality types. Like, do you want to do something on your own or do you need help?
Yes.
And people who like need help would be like, no, I've got to go back and get help. And then there's those of us who are like, oh, hell no. On my own.
Our girls were like, well, this is the right choice, but this one sounds more interesting. So they were choosing the story that would be more dramatic instead of the one that was more like, call the police, wait for your friends, all
you're
that.
Actively engaged. I think that's so cool. Because when you read a normal novel, you're just at the mercy of where the character's going regardless. And this one, you get to actually, like, push it in a direction that you want to have. Even if it's not the direction you think it should go, you can be like, let's just see what happens if
exactly.
I do this.
Exactly. And so the girls actually chose to call Ricardo and Lisa because they had thought they had a better chance with more people to have the story continue on for a longer period of time. So after I've discovered that information about Henry Marsden, Ricardo and Lisa come over. And then we all decide together if we're going to go to the prison or we're going to call the police after I catch them up to speed on Henry Marsden. Also, it is at this point that Ricardo goes, wait, I was just on whatever street that address is on from your, you know, weird phone intel. And that's actually the site of the old prison. So your next choice is to either go to the prison or call the police and just say, somebody is at this address calling for help. And the girls, of course, chose to go to the prison. So they drive to the, or they ride their bikes. I don't know. The whole crew, me and Ricardo and Lisa.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see you and Ricardo and Lisa hanging out.
Go to the prison, but it's not there anymore. It's now a modern house, like a super modern house with glass windows. And it's very fancy. And the only thing that's old fashioned about it is it, like a crumbling kind of old timey fence. And they knock on the door and nobody answers, but it slowly swings open.
Okay.
And a beautiful woman who is, for no apparent reason, noted as gorgeous and kind of Asian. Okay.
Hey, we should have an 80s bell every time something is, like, inappropriate.
Yes.
Like, inappropriately 80s or racist, we should just, like, or homophobic, we should have a bell that rings.
I know, right? So she is somewhat Asian, although they also make a note that she has no accent.
Okay.
But she invites them in, and she beckons with her finger at them to follow her. And it's at this point that we can either choose to follow her or go, this is weird, and leave. What do you think our daughters chose?
I chose to follow her.
Of course. So they chose to follow her, and it's at this point that the beautiful, nondescript Asian woman with no accent begins to transform. She sort of becomes transparent.
Ooh, cool. Okay.
And then suddenly turns into a Civil War prison warden named Henry Marsden.
Oh, I'm not okay with that, but okay.
Nope. She transforms, and then he whips you, and the last thing you hear are the cries of Lisa and Ricardo as you're being whipped. The end. What even did I read to our children?
Great ending.
So
they
terrible.
They chose poorly.
Yes, and then they read more, but I just was like, whatever, I'm done with my research.
Oh, man, that sounds like fun. Okay, I have an extra, a little addition for you.
Okie dokie.
I knew that most likely you were going to choose something pretty early on, too. And I was curious, after reading the history, of how they evolved. So, Edward Packard and R.A. Montgomery, they wrote the bulk of them. So, I don't remember what the total tally was, but it was kind of insane, considering between the two of them. Oh, it was, Packard wrote over 60 of them, and R.A. Montgomery wrote over 50 of them.
Wow.
That's a lot of books. But they outsourced too because the demand was just incredible.
Yeah.
So I had this thought of, like, let's flash forward 10 years and see where the series has evolved to.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked a book to do a second read of, and it'll be much more brief, to compare the very first novel from 10 years into the future,
okay,
when it is now a cash cow and they're selling millions of copies, how has it changed and how has it evolved? And it was really fascinating. So The second book that I read, which I won't spend too much time on, it was called Alien Go Home, and it's by Seddon Johnson. It was book number 101, and it was in 1990 is when this came out.
Okay.
It could not have been more different. It was fascinating. So the difference was, in the first book, it was like a paragraph, and then you got your decisions. And it was nonstop decision making. This one, it would be like 3 to 4 pages of real storytelling.
Of dialogue, yeah.
Yeah, and then you make your decision. So you're much more invested.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this one a lot more. It was fun.
Yeah.
But I also felt like I got to actually know the characters, and I felt like I was in the story.
Yeah.
Versus the first one where it was just flashing around.
Yeah.
In this one, though, just the basic premise was really funny. It's that it starts with me. I've hitchhiked all the way to the Yukon in Alaska to meet up with a crazy uncle.
Okay.
Because I spent some time on a ship with him, and he's now invited me to go pan for gold. That's the premise.
Okay.
So I also meet an old prospector named Sourdough.
Oh, yes.
Who rambles on. He also talks about, would you like to know what he's really interested in?
Yes.
The old glory hole.
Oh.
So he's looking for the glory hole.
Wait, is it he doing something gross or is he melting glass?
No, he's just looking for the glory hole.
Okay.
And I'm going to help him.
Okay.
So that night, I hear sounds in this and over this radio that we have, and it's Soviets saying that the satellite has been lost, and there's this shuttle that's crashing into Earth. We go up, look, there's all these choices, right? I have this choice, I go up and I look, and I see over the ridge of the mountain this flash in the sky. I run over there, I'm saving all the decisions that I had to make, but this is the story that how it unfolded for me with my mm-hmm. decisions. Is I go over and I see that there is a crash, and then I have this choice to go back and get old Sourdough to go along with me, or I can go by myself.
Okay.
I went by myself. I turned.
You didn't want any more of Sourdough?
No, I didn't trust him. So I went to page 15. I find this shuttle. Everyone's dead except for this guy that's my age, like a teenage boy, and it's this Russian guy, and he tells this crazy story about an alien orb that was following them and then made them crash, like cut their power and made them crash. And I'm like, BS. But then all of a sudden the orb comes out and the orb is like kind of short circuit style, like playful, sarcastic. It's this little metal ball named Glebo or Glebe. I think Glebe, just Glebe. It's called Glebe. And it's on Earth to do a term paper, like researching Earth and wants to go to L.A. That's the premise.
Okay. Let Glebe go to L.A. then.
It actually shouts at one point, Glebe to L.A. Glebe to L.A. So I really started to understand this character. And I was
you got to know Glebe.
Definitely knew Glebe. Glebe was a character.
What motivates Glebe?
So then he makes this humming sound and it's like causing problems of like hurts the ears. But I have my headphones on, so it doesn't really hurt me. So we run away and we try and calm Glebe down so he doesn't hurt us. That's where the story's going.
Okay.
So I calm him down and then I tell him, look, I'll take you to L.A. I'm going to put you in my bag, even though I'm not going to take him to L.A. I just need to, like, get out of the situation because this alien orb is crazy. And
so,
then,
okay.
Yeah. So then I'm hiking and Glebe's getting annoyed because he's not getting to L.A. He starts to make the sound. I put on my headphones. And then he says, hey, I want those headphones too because I like Earth music.
Oh.
Specifically, I like rock and roll.
Oh.
And I like rap.
Yes. Yeah.
And I immediately thought of a Teen Witch Glebe rap.
Yes.
But it didn't happen.
Top that.
Right. So I scold Glebe and I tell him, you got to be nice. You can't just kind of like make people do what you want. Then Glebe explains his backstory, which is after 400 years of being like a creature, their brain is scanned and they're put into this orb to go out and survey the universe, and his project is Earth. Hmm. So he knows about Earth through watching TV shows, and he wants to go meet Vanna White and be on the Wheel of Fortune.
Perfect.
Okay, so that's where the story is. Then a helicopter comes, two guys get out, they want Glebe. Glebe wants to go to LA. I have a choice to just let him go with the crazy people or go along. And I, of course, say, look, I'm going to make sure he's okay. They take me to a secret research center in the mountain. And then it gets really weird because they're outer space consultants, where they work for Spaced Out Incorporated, where some hippie guy is doing all this research.
Yes,
his name's Dr. Wacko.
Yes.
Yeah. And he is in charge. I tell him what's going on, and they decide that they should offer us a job. Keep in mind, we're two teenage boys. I have the choice to stay.
This is you and the Russian?
Yeah, and okay. The orb, Glebe.
And Glebe.
And I refuse. So I go to page 35 because I refused. I get locked up for days without food. Glebe is losing power because he doesn't have sunlight, but I teach him how to pick a lock. We escape. We run through a tanning salon that happened to be down there, mm-hmm. so Glebe can recharge. And then yes. Glebe makes a signal to harm the guards, and I put on my headphones. We escape. We find a motorcycle, and we drive off. It's all quite fun. Really cool adventure. But then the ending is, as we're cruising on this motorcycle, me, the Russian, and Glebe, there is a crowd in front of us, and there's a giant ramp. And out of nowhere, we ramp our motorcycle over a bunch of vehicles as the crowd cheers. And then when we land, we find out that we were working for Happy Harry's Hot Trucks for low bucks. And they were expecting Evel Knievel, but we just did the stunt, and he gives us a bunch of money, and that's the end of the book.
I mean, that explains why there is a ramp out there.
Yeah. So, okay, my thoughts on this is it was way more involved, way more fun, and I think that it benefited from giving me more story and investment. And I definitely enjoyed this one more.
Yeah, a couple pages instead of a paragraph.
Yeah, but I thought it was really interesting to compare a decade later how this had evolved.
For sure.
And I actually would argue that it got better with time because they figured it out.
Because you couldn't even read through the first couple and go, oh, okay, yeah, I see what you need to do here.
Yeah, but that's Choose Your Own Adventure. It went on.
You were going to say what happened with Packard.
Yeah, they kind of split over time. And then it went on until 1999. And they released officially 184 titles.
Jeez.
Under these. Went on to sell 250 million copies worldwide in like a ton of different languages. But then what happened is they split, and Montgomery created a company called ChooseCo, and he like retained the rights because he was the publisher. And so then over time, they started reissuing now the books, but they basically wrote out Packard and his involvement, and it, like, took the credit. But Montgomery's dead now, and Packard's still alive. I watched an interview with Packard, and he was this really, like, sweet old guy who was super humble. But, so I don't know if they really got along at the end or what. Maybe they did, but it seems like they both realized they made a lot of money and wanted to have, like, the credit. In my opinion, it seems like Montgomery kind of maybe was a bit more the businessman. And Packard was more like, I just wanted to make some fun stories.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. And then the lasting legacy is it became part of American culture. Like,
oh,
we all know Choose Your Own Adventure all the way up till right now. It's totally relevant right now because that Black Mirror episode just came out. And it's a Choose Your Own Adventure episode, mm-hmm. which is based around a guy who's working on one of the books. Sadly, Montgomery's company like is trying to sue them for using that, and I'm like, you realize how much attention that's bringing to your company?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So I don't know, but all in all, fascinating story, a really cool idea, and a extremely important part of any child who was raised in the 80s and early 90s. I thought it would be fun to discuss. So that's kind of the episode on Choose Your Own Adventure. Really, really enjoyed going over the history, but also seeing which stories we did. I kind of had this idea of like from time to time, we could do an episode where we do a couple more Choose Your Own Adventures.
Oh, fun.
But I would invite all of our listeners to find a book and read it, because yeah, it is really fun. Even if it's not your thing, just hang up your worries for one moment and go on an adventure and see where it takes you, because it is so much fun.
It's nostalgic.
Yeah.
And as geniuses say, nostalgia isn't what it used to be.
Oh, is that what they say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's our episode. Thanks so much for listening. And for those of you that have been longtime listeners, you got an episode that wasn't a movie. So we'll definitely do some more of these in the future. But I'm glad we could celebrate the monumental 39th episode.
Watch out. Here we come. Thanks for listening.
All right, everybody. That's the episode. If you want to follow us, we are on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, anywhere you can basically get a podcast. We're on there.
Go get it. Get after it.
Get it. We're on social media. We're on Instagram at LaserGraves. Our personal sites on Instagram. I am at death at 33 RPM.
I'm at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
The best thing you can do is rate, review, subscribe. More importantly, tell a friend. Come back if you're into the 80s, because we'll be back for our 40th, our boring 40th, because our 39th was awesome. And we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.